fan favorite flamethrower, a surprise breakout catcher, and an exciting deadline acquisition, all suited up for the Salt River Rafters in the Arizona Fall League. Which of them can punch their ticket to the big leagues? We're talking all that and more right now on the T-Backs Podcast.
Perdomo makes the play.
And a high fly ball. No doubt about this. Corbin Marte.
They're going to send them all the way around. Corbin Carroll with an inside the park answer back.
I'm Torrey Lovello.
It's Alec Thomas from the Diamondbacks.
Luis Gonzalez.
And you're listening to the T-Backs Podcast.
T-Backs Podcast.
T-Backs Podcast.
Arizona's number one baseball and beverage podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the T-Backs Podcast, where we bring you all the hottest Arizona Diamondbacks tea and talk from across the pond here in London. We're proud to be Arizona's number one baseball and beverage podcast, and this week we're looking to the future of the D-backs organization with what feels like one of baseball's best-kept secrets. It's that time of year again. It's the Arizona Fall League. We can't really do fall, we can't do cold weather without a cup of tea, so of course I've got my usual piping hot cup of tea right here. I've gone for an Earl Grey this week. I'm being a little bit bougie, and I hope you can forgive me for that. But if you're new to the scene, the Fall League, it's a mini tournament held across Arizona. It features teams made up of each MLB team's prospects who are sent to get some more baseball in before the winter, before they go off to, you know, winter ball in like the Dominican Republic and perhaps somewhere a little bit warmer. Arizona, of course, beautiful weather all year round. But it's also an incredible way to not just get to watch the stars of the future up close, but it's super affordable too. Now, I first went to a Fall League game in 2023, and I have been desperate to get back ever since, especially this year, where there's been a number of top Diamondbacks prospects making a name for themselves. And that's really what we're going to be talking about today. And we've got some real familiar names who you've probably seen in and around the Major League roster. And we've got some guys who perhaps have sort of come out of nowhere and have sort of stamped a bit of a reputation for themselves just based on their performances in the Fall League and how they've linked up with other Diamondbacks top prospects. So we're going to, you know, cover a lot of that, familiar names, newcomers, and there's a lot of baseball to catch up on. Let's start with probably the most well-known name on the roster, and that is right-hand relief pitcher, who was previously a starter, Dre Jameson. Now, he's coming off of Tommy John, as most of you will be aware. He's missed pretty much all of 2024 through 14 minor league and 3 major league innings this year, but he did go back on the injury list in May and made a couple of complex league appearances before being shut down again. Now, Dre, he's a guy who was first considered a starter candidate when he first broke through, was moved briefly to long relief out of the pen, and when we saw him in 2025, was being considered for the late inning or closer role. And that's on merit. That's not just out of necessity. I know the Diamondbacks closer conversation was one where, you know, it was Shelby Miller, and then he got injured, and then it was like, okay, well, could it be like any one of like Kevin Ginkle, Ryan Thompson, etc., etc.? Everyone kept getting injured. Everyone kept, oh, we don't have a closer. I mean, we still don't have a closer. And that's going to be something that, yeah, might end up being a pretty big target in the offseason. I think there's been news early today, you know, somebody like Pete Fairbanks is going to become available. To go, you know, Ranger Suarez. Is he going to be somebody people are floating around? What's happening in pitching? We don't really know. But Dre Jameson was somebody who was very much being thought about as potentially a candidate there. His first major league appearance since July of 2023, Dre Jameson entered in the extra innings of a tight game with the Chicago Cubs, of course, and picked up his second MLB save in his career on just 8 pitches. And we thought, yeah, okay, looks like he's going to be back. Had a pretty solid second appearance this year. And his third appearance is a pretty ugly outing. That's where all of his 6.34 ERA to the end of the year came from, which was included some inherited runners, gave up runners and runs he gave up himself. Either way, it wasn't a fantastic end to the year for him, and that was sort of all we saw of Dre Jameson so far this year. Now, he's one of 2 Diamondbacks to have made the opening Fall League game, and he looked pretty impressive against the Glendale Desert Dogs, who, of course, boast the prospects from the Blue Jays, the Cardinals, the Braves, the Dodgers, and the White Sox. Jameson, in that appearance, tossed a scoreless inning, needing only 8 pitches, 5 of which were strikes to retire the side in order, and he topped out at 99.4 miles per hour on the fastball, picking up the win in the process. And that's the sort of thing we want to be seeing from Dre Jameson. Admittedly, Fall League stats aren't always a great indicator, but it's a sign that, you know, he's throwing, you know, strikes, always good, but he's healthy enough to be making that velocity that we want to see from him that shows that perhaps his arm is in a healthier position than maybe it was at this time a few months ago. His second appearance was a little more than worse, however. He only managed to collect one out, throwing 22 pitches, while only managing to land six for strikes. Only gave up one hit, but walked three and was charged for four earned runs, although three of those four were bequeathed runners who scored off of the next arm. Jameson entered in the fourth inning and immediately walked the first two batters, managed to strike out, then allowed a single to load the bases with one out. He issued his third walk, plated a run, and then got the hook. It wasn't a great day all round for the Rafters, but there was a bright spot, which was another D-back, outfielder Jack Hurley, who went 1-for-2 with a ripped 98-mile-an-hour line drive double to left. And he's somebody who's popped in and up with a couple of big moments throughout the fall league. But Dre Jameson did manage to dial it back in overall. He threw 18 pitches, 12 for strikes, and allowed one hit, striking out one in a scoreless inning his next appearance, with a lone hit being a ground ball single. He was removed from the roster a few days ago, but it's not injury-related, we're told, which is important, and his upper 90s fastball remains consistent. And given that we've barely seen Dre since his string of injuries, there is still plenty of time for the 28-year-old, especially given Arizona's search for a closer ramping up in the hot stove. But as of right now, he has to remain in that conversation. Going back to that early game we talked about, Jameson was joined in earning a scoreless inning and a hold in that game by fellow reliever Kyle Ament, who had a rough debut in the fall league. He had made his debut giving up a walk, three hits and four runs, but he rebounded on the past Tuesday, throwing an excellent shutout frame. He needed just 15 pitches, 9 for strikes, throwing a 1-2-3 inning and striking out the side, one looking, two swinging. His fastball has climbed up around the 94-mile-an-hour mark, which isn't, you know, groundbreaking numbers, but it is, you know, solid. While his hard 87-mile-an-hour slider accounted for the final whiff on both of his swinging punch-outs. Ament has a career 2.52 ERA over 3 years in the D-backs minor league system. He made 27 appearances for the Aces in 2025, although he did suffer an injury that held him out from May until August. Otherwise, he would have likely been called up during the rapid rotation of pitchers in the D-backs minor league pen that we saw in the final quarter of the season. I think you'd probably expect to see him there at some point in 2026. I know it's a fairly small sample size, but he's K'd 100% of the big leaguers he's faced in the fall league this year. That being Nacho Alvarez Jr., who hit 234 with two homers for the Braves in the big leagues this year. And it looks like he's expected to be outrighted back to AAA Reno, which, yeah, is not a fairly friendly league for pitchers to be in. You will get hit pretty hard in the PCL. But it's, you know, where our AAA guys go, so we've got to make the best of that. But going back to that first game of the fall league, we also got a first glimpse of 22-year-old righty David Hagerman, who was an arrival from Texas as part of the Merrill Kelly trade, and he was given the start as well. So it was reported that he looked pretty imperious through three innings of work, totaled 43 pitches, 17 four-seam fastballs, which clocked between 93 and 96, His off-seat speed stuff included 10 curveballs and 7 cutters, which generated 7 of his 11 whiffs on 24 swings. But he also mixed in sinkers, sliders, and a changeup. Hagerman's pitching line ended in that appearance at 3 scoreless, with just 1 hit, 0 walks, 5 strikeouts, and he showed excellent pace and command, with 30 of 43 pitches for strikes, and he struck out his last 4 batters swinging. So he's kept the strong consistency we saw from him in the minors at High A Hillsborough in 2025. I'd expect to see some development at least to AA next year based on the strong progress we're seeing at the moment. And yeah, while I'm not a 100% baseball expert when it comes to minor league development stuff, he's likely going to move up to the D-backs prospect rankings too. He's currently berthed at number 15. Quick tea break. That's good. That's actually really good tea. You know, it's hard to believe that the Diamondbacks pitching farm is ranked last out of 30 in a number of crucial metrics, as was reported earlier the other week. But sometimes all it takes to make or break a pitcher is a good catcher making the calls behind the plate. And that's a pretty good transition, I would say, to what we've seen so far from Hagerman's battery partner, which is Kenny Castillo, who called all of the pitches in that impressive opening day performance. Castillo is slightly more of an unknown with the Diamondbacks system. He sits outside the top 30 prospect rankings at the last revision. But if you saw him with Visalia last year or Hillsborough in 2025, that you'll know he's an impressive defense-first catcher, a 985 average fielding average across 460 innings last year. And if you aren't big on pure defensive metrics like I am, that means he's very consistent with only 8 errors in the entire year. of any catcher on the Diamondbacks roster or who progressed out of the organization in the past 5 years, that defensive metric is only beaten by Gabby Moreno. Even Jose Herrera, who, as we all know, was a defense-first, bat-hopefully kind of catcher, who didn't have that kind of record, only putting up a 969 percentage in the equivalent stage of his development. But Castillo is having himself a mini breakout at the plate this fall league in the offseason. At one point, he was 5-for-10 with a home run, and the majority of his power going towards the poolside. And given the Diamondbacks' relative lack of depth at catcher, especially given the election of James McCann going for free agency, probably looking for a team who can probably be more of a guaranteed competitor in the later stages of the year, I'd say that Kenny is absolutely one to keep an eye on, as a good few months of development will see them hot on the heels of the likes of Christian Sheridan and Ivan Luciano, who, for all intents and purposes, we're not really sure what's going to happen with either of those guys. In terms of the catching depth, we've got Gabby Moreno, and then when Adrian Del Castillo, who's, you know, very much more of a DH candidate these days. Catching depth, not our strong point. So I think having somebody like Kenny Castillo, who I think is very much specialized towards the kind of thing that saw Gabby Moreno given less and less innings behind the plate, especially given concerns about maybe his calling of games and calling of pitches. Having a pitcher who very much can specialize in that area to try and balance out the platoon, I think is something to consider. I'm not saying Kenny Castillo is going to pop up in the big leagues next year. I think that would be a huge, huge shock, and I don't recommend you put any of your money on that. But it's interesting to keep an eye on. However, when it comes to hitting, the top hitting prospect on site for the Diamondbacks going to the Fall League is Jansel Luis, who went 4-for-16 with 2 walks, 2 strikeouts, and a 250 average from 14 balls in play, 10 over 94 miles an hour. And he is really doing a great job of developing his swing mechanics and launch angles. So while he's not launching the ball for the fences very often, he's doing a very good job laying off of balls, swinging at strikes, and putting the ball in the right areas. I think a lot of the criticism of what I saw on the Diamondbacks on social media last year was very much just people like, why can't you do the basics right? Why can't you do this? Why can't you do that? Why can't you drive in a runner from third with less than 2 outs? Why can't you just do the essentials right? And Kenny Castillo, Jansel Luis, both been doing a pretty good job there. In the case of Luis, he's likely to be developed more as a shortstop or a third baseman in the future, especially given Demetrio Cristantes' big injury on that side of the infield. And while he's, still a few years away, that's worth factoring into any conversation about depth charts as we focus on that corner of the diamond this offseason and beyond. He has also been named to the Fall Stars game roster, with his standout numbers so far being 3 extra base hits, 8 RBIs, 8 stolen bases, and is the only D-back on the Four-Star Games roster. So you better get yourselves down to Sloan Park on Sunday to support the Soul Snake. Some were expecting to see the statistically best pitcher also make an appearance, and that was right-handy Yordan Chalas, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, who has a 1.35 ERA over 6.2 innings pitched, with 7 hits, 1 earned runs, no homers, 1 BB, 8 Ks, and a 1.20 WHIP. But seemingly he didn't make the cut or get the votes, which is a little bit surprising. It took 3 appearances for Chalas to give up a run from the start of the Fall League, which included earning the win in his first game, and he currently sits as the Diamondbacks' number 21 overall prospect. The keen focus this offseason for him has been on developing a splitter during his time in the Fall League, especially focused against lefties, and we've seen, especially from the likes of Yoshinobu Yamamoto this postseason, if you were watching the World Series, which I'm not going to talk about very much, that actually a well-developed splitter can be absolutely devastating if you know when and where to use it. That's probably the most I've seen a splitter thrown in just regular game watching for a while. I think having that as having a put-away pitch that's a splitter is an interesting thing to see, because we know that, you know, like Justin Martinez can throw a splitter. We've seen like a good 12-6 curveball from Tyler Rashi this year. But a splitter is a little bit different, and I think if you can add that to your repertoire very early in your time at the development, that could be a significant factor for where Chalas ends up. He's also got a high 90s fastball and a pretty good slider as well. But there are still questions to be asked of him. It's whether or not he can make it as a starter, like how they viewed him in Hillsborough, or whether he develops into more of a middle to high leverage reliever as he's been used so far for the rafters. But he pitches without fear, and many of you have seen the incredible 3-pitch sequence that he threw for the K against a highly rated Cubs prospect Cole Matisse, and that's over on Mike McDermott's Twitter page if you want it, so definitely one to watch there. Now, for those of you who are sitting and asking, why should I care about a bunch of prospects who may or may not make it? It's likely because we've seen the news this week from Mike Hazen that he will consider dealing top 5, top 10 prospects to try and go cut a little bit of payroll from the Diamondbacks this offseason and go and get the kind of things we need, especially starting pitching. And with a lot of names floating around, like the likes of Mackenzie Gore, Hunter Green, both potentially trade targets for the Diamondbacks, and they're the names we've seen linked a little bit in the past, like 48 hours since the free agency thing started. Of course, we're looking at bringing Merrill Kelly back. We've tendered a qualifying offer to Zach Gallen. It's pretty much 100% that Zach Gallen's going to reject that, so we have to start looking elsewhere. And if the Diamondbacks are going to go and trade, we are going to see guys in the top five of the system. I think pretty much anyone that isn't Ryan Waldschmidt is potentially on the chopping block for a trade option there. So we might see, you know, somebody like Lou James Groover, who was in the Four League last year, going. We might see John Lawler, who I've talked about before as being, you know, one of the key trade candidates. We might see him linked. So whether or not these guys like Kenny Castillo, who aren't making the top 30 within the organization, they're going to be relevant pieces. They're going to be moving up the charts if we're seeing the top 5, top 10 prospects all being put together in trade packages. And ultimately, that's kind of make or break for a lot of these guys. Like, imagine jumping from being unranked and all of a sudden, if you're somebody like Kenny Castillo, you're number 22, 21 in the organization, you're filling in slots. I know we acquired a lot of people, like Tyler Locklear is still considered a prospect, David Hagerman as well. People coming in and like, yeah, pretty close to what we need them to be. We've seen the acquisitions. Trevor Hoffman came in as part of a trade key, came over from the Royals in part of the Randall Grichuk trade. All of a sudden, these guys who are around the peripherals are going to be getting a lot more front and center reps, and it's going to be the case of the bottom rung, middle, lower prospects to come up and make an impact. So if you want to know just how good anybody of these slightly unknowns in the Diamondback system are going to be, that's what the Arizona Fall League is really good for. It's not just a fantastic spectator experience as well. It's a place where you can see exactly what direction the future of the Diamondbacks is moving towards. There's a lot of stuff to be aware of floating around the fandom at the moment. We've seen from Gambo coming out that somebody like Jake McCarthy and Alec Thomas not really being rated as having very much trade value. The Diamondbacks are going to go after young and controllable starting pitching like Hunter Green, good candidate. He has a few years of team control left. We've also talked about potentially interest in a one-year reunion with Paul Goldschmidt. We talked about that very a great length last week. And of course, the consideration with the reunion with Merrill Kelly. But given what's happened with some of the moves today, we've seen, of course, the tendered qualifying offer with Zach Gallen. We've seen Ildemar Vargas like free agency. Austin Pope has been outrighted becoming a free agent, whereas Blake Walston, AJ Puck, Corbin Burnes, Christian Montesdioca, Christian Maynard, Justin Martinez, Tommy Henry, Kevin Gingle, and Pavin Smith all activated onto the roster off of the 60-day injury list. That's merely kind of a processional formality that we were going to expect to see just in order to see the management of that slots. It's the prospects who we're going to have to be considering as making an impact. And if we look at the D-backs prospects at the moment, there's a lot of guys who are going to probably be on that chopping block. Number one overall prospect of the Diamondbacks is Ryan Waldschmidt, and his ETA is 2027 in the outfield. We've seen a little bit of him really breaking out. And his current rankings at the moment, Slade Caldwell as well, another speedy outfielder. We're expecting to see more improvement of him. He's currently in Hillsborough. But you look down at like number three, number four, you know, Cason Cunningham, Demetrio Cristantes, Tommy Troy, JD Dix, Patrick Forbes. There's a lot of guys there who you might not know a super amount about, and they're not also appearing in the Fall League either. So it means that they're sort of in this middle no man's land where the Diamondbacks don't want them going to the Fall League and getting extra reps, but at the same time, they're probably not going to be making the majors next year. There's consideration we might see some of Tommy Troy at that level next year. Cole Drake at number six, of course, came over from the Texas Rangers. Is he one of the guys that we think, yeah, is he good enough to make an impact, or is he going to be like only kept in the organization as a prospect that probably holds some trade value? if he was part of the trade that was being sent over in exchange for Merrill Kelly, then clearly the Diamondbacks are like, okay, yeah, we'll take him as part of that deal. But is he just making up the numbers? Is he there to be somebody who holds trade value? Or is he someone who's actually, they think, no, he can make an impact? This is all a very interesting things to consider. And you go further down, like James Groover, we saw him in the fall league. People were impressed by him. People were excited by how he was coming along. He's in the infield. His ETA on MLB's rankings right now has him at 2026. Is he going to be a third base option, especially if we're going to see Jordan Lawler either traded or getting reps in center field? What's going to happen with Blaze Alexander? He was impressive when he made in the outfield. If we don't re-sign Eugenio Suarez, people are saying, well, it would be between Jordan Lawler or Blaze Alexander at third base. Maybe that's Groover's spot to try out for. Blaze Alexander sort of forced his way onto the roster when we first saw him through just how good he was in spring training. I think Gino Groover, or Lou James Groover, is somebody who's very much capable of trying to target that sort of appearance, where he's like, I think I can be that good and I can have that attitude going into spring training. But then further down the line, Jansel Luis is in the fall league. Dan Egan, not quite expected yet. Then what's going on with Drew Jones? You know, he's somebody everyone was getting so excited about. And he seems to have really regressed. He's had a couple of bits of injury trouble as well. But, you know, what's going on with that? These are all guys who, yeah, all of a sudden might find themselves on chopping block. Christopher Torren, we saw him in the fall league. What's going to happen with him? And then getting further down, Yasiel Soler. We are absolutely stacked with either okay to mid-level relief pitching or guys who may have a slot in the infield. But if you're not going to get rid of Ketel Marte, I know people are saying Ketel Marte is probably like our most valuable trade piece right now, and he's been linked with a number of teams. And yeah, why wouldn't you link him with a number of the bigger market teams than us? He's a guy who's been in the MVP conversation more times than not, but I don't think Ketel gets traded. And then the other side, that infield, of course, Aroldo Perdomo, he's the captain of the infield in everything but name. He's just signed an extension as well. We've got him locked down for a few years. So what happens if you're like a shortstop / second baseman, unless you can play first, because we need somebody to be part of the platoon with Pavin Smith there, and you think you're better than Tyler Locklear is going to be, or you can play third base and provide some of the power that we've lost after we lost Eugenio Suarez. And it's a possibility he resigns with the Diamondbacks, but I think more likely he's going to get dragged back towards someone like a Seattle Mariners, etc. People are saying Diamondbacks should go look at Isaac Paredes, who I believe is in Houston, as an option at third base. But we need somebody who can play third base there. But the only outright third baseman on this top 30 list that I'm seeing right now, you got either Yasiel Soler or Eniavert Perez, and he's obviously a few years away now. His 2028 prediction there. We're not quite sure what this looks like, and the top 30 has been overhauled a little bit since the trade deadline, because you've had a lot of prospects coming in, like the arrival of somebody like Hunter Cranton came over from Seattle. You've got guys arriving like David Hagerman, who came from Texas. You've got Cole Drake in there as well. We're not quite sure how these guys actually stack up versus what the Diamondbacks have in the system. The way this gets organized is a combination like baseball writers' opinions versus how people choose to look at some of the statistics. How that actually winds up affecting who's going to be on the chopping block, who's going to be traded, it's sort of what everything's up for grabs right now. We're not sure who's going to do what. One name I would just continue to highlight in here, though, is Mitch Bratt. Mitch Bratt, of course, currently in Double A with the Sod Poodles, and it's interesting to see what's going to happen with him. He's of course Canadian, just want to put that out there, and he was the youngest player on Canada's 2023 World Baseball Classic team, reaching Double A just after his 21st birthday, and he was dealt to the Diamondbacks at the trade deadline for Merrill Kelly. People are kind of hoping he would add a little bit of velocity since he turned pro. That hasn't quite happened. But at the same time, he's got a fairly standard three-pitch mix, a fastball, a slider, and a changeup. But he's got a very relaxed-looking athletic delivery, kind of similar to what we saw kind of over the top from a couple of the guys in Toronto's system for a while. And I think that's maybe something you might see a little bit more of people coming out of Canada. He was the fifth round pick in 2021, but he is expected to be reaching something close to the majors in 2026. What's going to happen with him, though? We haven't seen him really coming into the fall league. We haven't seen any announcements about winter ball. We're not quite sure what's going on there. But as if you read his scouting report, it says he moves his pitches around the zone, can read hitter swings to determine how to get them out, with a craftiness and a mound presence standing out more than his pure stuff, giving him a high floor as a back of the rotation starter. Now, back of the rotation for the Diamondbacks, that's completely up in the air going into 2026. We need, I think, probably the trade or acquire for, out of free agency, at least two starting pitchers. But let's say we go and blow a bunch of money on a one-year reunion with Paul Goldschmidt. Maybe we try and get Eugenio Suarez back if we can. What if all our money goes on hitting? Then we're going to have to very much rely on the farm for the back of the rotation starters. I think Dan Egan, somebody going to be in that conversation. Yumin Lin had an over 6 ERA in AAA last year. Admittedly, he didn't have the best year. And again, Reno's not the best place to be a pitcher. But you got to say, Mitch Brat, is he factoring into the conversation as well? David Hagerman, impressive, but still AA levels. Is he going to be back of the rotation starter? We don't know. Does somebody like Christian Mayner still have it together the way we would expect them to after their injury this year? We're really not sure. Like, you got Ryan Nelson, Eduardo Rodriguez, and Brandon Fart as your currently major league starting pitching. So what happens? It's all up in mystery, and I, for one, am actually very excited to see what's going to happen there. We're going to wrap it up there for that episode. I want to say thank you very much to you for watching, for being a supporter of the show. We want to shout out to the Home Run Travel Club for being another friend of the show as well. Please make sure to like, subscribe, hit the bell icon, notifications, blah, 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 wherever it is that you're watching such a listening. Thanks very much, and we'll see you on the next one. Goodbye.